Our desire this morning is that you feel welcome. And if you do not, whether you've been here dozens or hundreds of times before, or whether this is your very first time, I'd love to know why you didn't feel welcome today, because we'd like to do more to make you feel welcome at these times together. About 20 years ago, I went to an elementary school to do a consult relating to an IEP, and when I got there, the people that I was going to meet with said, oh, we're having an assembly, and so we're going to have to postpone for a while, so why don't you just stay and we'll meet after the assembly. So I just went in to watch the assembly, and they, about 300 kids, elementary school kids, they brought into this cafetorium, was what they called it, and the kids began to demolish the building very quickly. The noise level was off the charts, and the principal got up to introduce the person who was going to do the assembly, and the kids didn't hear anything. They were just kind of, you know, ricocheting off the walls, and I thought, boy, this guy is in for a hard time. This is going to be a really tough day. But the minute it came his turn, this incredibly strong and handsome man of African origin just jumped to his feet, ran over to this elaborate drum that was placed in the center of the stage and began to drum. He jumped up in the air. He danced around. And the kids were just like, what is this? And then he started in a whisper to share his first story of Africa. And 45 minutes later, when he said, this is my last story, you could actually hear the kids go, oh. I didn't see any child act up for at least 45 minutes. Nobody even went to the bathroom during that 45 minutes. They sat there mesmerized by this guy's ability, the information he was giving him, the explanation of the symbols, and just the powerful stories that he created. And I would guess that 20-something years later, if you were to find one of those children today, you could say, tell me something that you learned that day, and I bet they could still tell you parts, if not all, of some of the stories. And whenever I think about, I've heard some pretty good storytellers in my life, but whenever I think of storytellers, I think of that individual and the great job that he did that day. The other thing that was so fascinating about it is I went over to him afterwards, as a number of people did, and told him about an incredible job he had done, and he wasn't at all interested in that. What he wanted to know is, do you think the children got the stories and the passion that he had about sharing the information? When I think about storytellers, obviously the storyteller that's most prominent is Jesus. Jesus was an incredible storyteller. So much of his teachings, the difficult teachings, the things that were hard to explain and hard to understand, the things that would have been hard to remember, were told in these vivid, powerful stories that you literally can't forget. There are so many people in the world who don't understand that some of the stories they like came from the Bible. You can ask, you know, the story of the Good Samaritan? Well, sure, you know that's from the Bible. Is it really? There are people who don't know that. They don't know where those stories came from. Today, we're going to talk about some parables that Jesus shared in the last week of his life. You might think, as I would kind of think, maybe this isn't the appropriate time for telling stories. And yet, this is such a powerful method that Jesus uses that even in these critical final days, he continues to share these stories. There are basically six stories that we find listed here from the book of Matthew. The last three follow Jesus' discussion of the destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem and his return, and they just emphasize that fact over and over again, and the preparation and the being ready and the judgment and that sort of thing. So I'm not going to take time with the three parables from Matthew 25, but I would like to look quickly at the three earlier ones. I think the context is important and the timing is important. Why would Jesus tell this story a couple of days before he died? Why would this be one of the last things he wants you to hear and know and remember? How many parables are there? somewhere between 46 and 70. And you go, well, why don't we know for sure? Because it's in the eye of the beholder. These are stories. Is this a parable? Somebody says, no, this is not. That's a parabolic statement. Even in this section, there's a great deal of argument because there's this discussion that involves a fig tree. And really, that's just an event from the narrative. And some people come along and say, well, that's a parable. And so you have this big discussion about what should be a parable, what isn't a parable. So we don't know for sure. We don't know exactly what the intent was with each. And so with many of them, it's clear or it's even identified as a parable, but we don't always know. I'm going to focus on these three. We'll start with the two sons. Not a real popular parable, but I imagine everybody here has heard it before. It's Matthew chapter 21, starting in verse 28, going through verse 32. What do you think? There was a man who had two sons. He went to the first and said, son, go and work today in the vineyard. I will not, he answered. But later he changed his mind and went. Then the father said to the other son and went to the other son and said the same thing. He answered, I will, sir, but he didn't go. Which of the two did what the father wanted? The first, they answered. Jesus said to them, and if you are at all prepared for seeing somebody or listening to the retelling of somebody be really offended, this is where it starts. Truly I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are entering the kingdom of God ahead of you. Can you imagine what those religious leaders, what the reaction must have been when he said that to them? I can see them looking at each other. I can see them actually putting their hands into fists. There's just all kinds of things you can see these people, this reaction of, did he just say that to us? For John came to show you the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax collectors and the prostitutes did. And even after you saw this, you did not repent and believe. How easy it is to say words. Go work in my vineyard. Sure, Dad, no problem. The problem's not in saying it. The problem is whether you show up or not. Woody Allen is supposed to have said that 90% of life is showing up. There's many, many other people to whom that statement has been attributed, and the number changes anywhere from 75 to about 90%, depending on who you're thinking about. But sometimes life is like that. You don't feel like doing it. You know, I said I would, but, you know, I don't really want to. This is not a good day. It's not a good time. It's not a good situation. And yet we oftentimes go, no, I said I would do it. I'm going to do it. And it turns out to be something very, very different from what we expected it literally to be. When we don't show up, though, people learn that our words don't mean very much. When we make promises to our spouse, when we say things to our children, and then we conveniently step back and go, well, it didn't work out exactly to go that way. Terry and I had been married about a year, and we were planning to go to the drive-in, and this is the early, this is 1971, so they still had drive-ins. We were going to go that on a Friday night, and it was raining outside. And so I said, well, we can't go, it's raining. And she said, what does that have to do with it? I said, well, they don't show the drive-in in the rain. She said, are you sure? And I said, well, and I could remember that when I was a kid, my dad had promised to take me to see like a Ren 10-10 movie on a Friday night after work. It was raining, so my dad told me a fib. Oh, they don't have the drive-in in the rain. And I'm trying to figure it up here. 15, 16, 17 years later, I still believed that they didn't show the drive-in when it was raining. And you think, how silly that is. But it does remind us of what the power of the information that a parent delivers. When you say you're going to do something and then you create a little distraction or alternate fact to explain why you didn't actually go ahead and do that, then that lie has a tendency to rest, and sometimes it can rest for a very long time. Each and every day, each and every moment. We're faced with opportunities of, do I show up or not? You know, I know what I said, but do I really, actually, truly show up? The next one is the parable of the tenants. It's found in Matthew chapter 21, starting in verse 33. Jesus here says to them, listen to another parable. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a wall around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. Then he rented the vineyard to some farmers and moved to another place. When the harvest time approached, he sent his servants to the tenants to collect his fruit, what we might call a shared arrangement that is a part of the history of our nation. The tenants seized his servants. They beat one, killed another, and stoned a third. Then he sent other servants to them, more than the first time, and the tenants treated them the same way. Last of all, he sent his son to them. They will respect my son, he said. But when the tenants saw the son, they looked at it in a totally different way. They said to each other, this is the heir. Come, let's kill him and take his inheritance. So they took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? Jesus tells this story that we create a lot of passion. And he kind of provides an open-ended question to the people he's talking to. He says, well, what do you think is going to happen here? Well, he will bring those wretches to a wretched end, they replied. And he will rent the vineyard to other servants. He will give them his share of the crop at harvest time. Jesus said to them, have you never read in the scripture, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone? The Lord has done this, and it's marvelous in our eyes. And then he goes on to tell them that that's going to be taken away from them. And he has other negative things to say that to him as well, and they, of course, are offended by what has to be said here. We look at this story, and you've probably heard this story before, and when you think about what's the context for me, you can easily say, well, this really doesn't have any application to me. This is about the Jews. This is about all that God had blessed the Jews with. And now God's son comes and is ready to assume his rightful place, and the Jews are like, no, we're keeping this stuff for ourselves. And if we have to actually kill him, we'll do that. And so we have a tendency to just kind of push it by and say, well, really doesn't relate to us. It was pretty specifically to them. But does it have any relationship to us at all? You ever think this church is yours? Probably not on a conscious level. But I see people behave all the time like they think the church is theirs. That it's for their ego. That it's for their pleasure. That it's for the purpose of meeting their needs. It's for various other things that might be useful and beneficial for them. And in the process, they forget totally about who the owner is, what the purpose was, and the incredible price that's been paid. It happens so easily and so quickly. How do you behave in somebody else's house? Like you do at your house? Maybe sometimes you go to somebody's house and they say, oh, we don't wear our shoes in the house. Well, do you argue and say, well, I wear my shoes at home, so I feel more comfortable with my shoes on, so I'm going to keep my shoes on. We don't behave that way typically. Even though we may not be, that may not be what we want to do, we recognize that we're a visitor. We're temporarily in someone else's abode. It belongs to them. And my responsibility is to cooperate with the owner rather than try to get my way over and over and over again. One more parable quickly, and I don't really have time to read it. I'm just going to try to tell it quickly. It's the parable of the wedding banquet. The son of the king is marrying And the time comes when the banquet is to take place. The bridegroom is arriving. And so he goes out into the highways and byways and says, "Invite, bring all those people in that I've invited." And they don't want to come. And the king says, "Well, they didn't really deserve to come. So let everybody else come in." And of course, as we look at this, we understand that it's, again, the Jewish perspective and what Jesus is telling the Jews, that this is going to be taken away from you. There certainly are applications for us as well. This is the king. Who wouldn't want to go to the king's house? What would the food be like at the king's banquet? How about the opportunity to rub elbows with the upper crust of society? There's all kinds of things that would motivate somebody, in a practical sense, to want to go to a banquet that was being hosted by a king. So why didn't they go? Well, it comes down to the fact that their relationship to the king wasn't real. They didn't want to go to the king's banquet. It wasn't special for them. It wasn't unique for them. It wasn't something that they wanted to do or would have been excited about. And really, that's kind of the overarching umbrella of all three of these parables. The son who didn't go and work didn't really want to do it because it wasn't real or important to him. The tenants who were taking over the vineyard, their relationship wasn't real. The wedding banquet is not real. And so we have a lot of pretending that's taken place. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, 21, as a part of the Sermon on the Mount, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that last day, 'Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' Then I will say to them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.'" There's nothing more powerful than real Christianity. And there's nothing more frustrating than artificial Christianity. Jesus chooses his last days. He chooses his final words. He chooses his final encounters to share some useful and powerful stories. And stories certainly have their place in final days. Maybe in your experience with this life, at times when somebody who's a part of your family is about to pass to the other side, maybe you as a family or even as an individual will recount special stories. And I've seen and witnessed families do that, seen and witnessed families sing together in various kinds of things. I did a funeral one time for a person I didn't know, and that's an extremely difficult thing to do. She was a middle-aged woman who had no other family. There wasn't any family members that I could talk to at all. Enough just to do a generic service, and it was pitiful. When it was over, there were about 8 women who were there who were friends of this lady, and they said, "Do you mind if we say something?" I said, "Be my guest." And they got up and they held hands around and over the top of the casket. And they told stories of this woman. I never met her in life, but I know so much about her. At the end, they sang a country western song. One of the most poorly done songs you'll ever hear. They knew it. They acknowledged it. They didn't care. It's an important song to their friend, and the story, the song itself, was a story. Jesus told these stories, and I think one of the reasons that he does that is not only is it a great teaching tool, not only is it a way to get interest, not only is it a way to create things that you can remember easily, the truth is that all of us are a story. You have a story. And sometimes the way you can help somebody is by listening to their story. Sometimes the way that you can be useful to somebody else is to get them to identify certain segments of their story. But the most powerful thing that needs to be remembered is our story's not done. Today, your story's not over. Some of the people sitting here today have years, decades, long periods of time to continue working on their story. There are other people today that Though we may not know it, we may have a much, much, much shorter period of time, much shorter opportunity. But when the clouds close over us, the story that's written is written by us. We get to write our own story. And quite simply today, if your story needs a different conclusion, start that conclusion right now. If we can help you do that, we'd be glad to as we sing this song together.